Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
So, have you ever asked yourself the question, dang, how did they do that? I wish my copy was that catchy. I'm talking about when you've heard a song. Well, Nathan and I have had that thought over and over again. And in fact, we have pondered the similarities between writing a song and writing copy. You see, we're both copywriters, but we're also songwriters. We stoutly assert that we are both amateur songwriters. At one point, though, Nathan's music was business. I never got that far. It's always been a hobby for me. But I have studied and tried intently. Just turned out that wasn't my path. However, once you start with music, you can't leave it. It's like the mafia or Hotel California, or it never leaves you. So we both live with the music inside of us all the time. And today, we'd like to talk about what we learned from songwriting and how a great song compares to a great piece of copy. And I forgot to put copy is powerful in the show notes, but you guys know the drill. You're responsible for how you use what you hear in this podcast. And we'll leave it at that because, you know, at one point, our friend Doug Pugh actually put it to music. And you can see if you can fish out that episode. But let's get into it. So, Nathan, talk about how you got this idea. I mean, the minute I heard it, I loved it, but I'd love to know how you came up with it.
When I was in the music industry, when me and my brother were making music, one of the things that kept coming up is there's certain templates, structures to making a hit pop song. There's certain keys and tones that get repeated over and over again. There's certain flows to putting a song together. And when I first came across your work, when I was in getting into learning how to write sales copy, I noticed that there was a kind of an overlap. There's a flow. There's multiple different flows that you can use for a sales page, just like you can with a song. And since you're a musician and since I'm a musician, I thought it would be fun to kind of compare and contrast the structure of a pop hit song and a hit sales letter.
That's so true. I mean, in the beginning, when you start anything, whether it's copywriting or songwriting or screenwriting or journalism or anything else, it looks like a total mystery. And when you see the finished product, it looks like it was done by magic. And to be fair, there is a certain amount of magic in the things that really work. But this seems more like the kind of magic that comes from hard work rather than, oh, God, I heard about this restaurant. I saw something on social media. It said, because of recent problems, no Ouija boards are allowed on the patio. So these things, yeah, a certain magic comes when you keep working at it over and over again. But it's not like, I don't know, the structure part is very explicable and repeatable and worthwhile knowing about. So, yeah, I mean, let's start with the intro to a song. Or the intro to copy. I mean, we usually call it the hook. Might call it the headline. You know, I guess there are other musical terms for it. But it does the same thing, right? I mean, in music, it sets up the song, usually before the lyrics or the story starts. And in copy, it grabs the attention before the actual story of the copy or the procession of words starts, right?
Yeah, and I think that in music, oftentimes it sets the tone, the emotional tone for the song. And in copy, we have a bunch of different styles of hooks. We have a bunch of different styles of headlines, and they kind of do the same thing. Is this going to be one that evokes curiosity? Is this going to be one that appeals to FOMO? Is this going to be one that starts off by appealing to the sense of danger, something, maybe there's a tiger in the bushes. There's different tones, different emotional tones that we want to tap into when we start off a sales piece that if you listen to a good song, they usually do the same thing. They hit a tone right at the beginning.
Yeah, and I think very often that's something people don't think about, and they should. It's like, you know, the branding world, a lot of times their commercials and their ads and maybe even their websites are all about creating a feeling, right? They want a customer to associate safety or pleasure or togetherness of a family with their product. And I don't think we put as much emphasis on that in direct response marketing, but we should put some, because emotion is going to be the thing that drives a person to take action, including to buy, right?
Mm-hmm. And just to kind of put the cherry on the top, a lot of times when you're listening to a good song, before the lyrics even come in, just that listening to the first four bars or the first 16 bars, you can tell what type of song it's going to be. You can tell, is this going to be an upbeat song? Is this going to be a song that's dramatic and pulls at the heartstrings? What type of song is this going to be? And a lot of times, just reading the headline and maybe the first part of the hook, you can also do that with sales copy if the copywriter is as good as a good hit song writer is.
Right. And, you know, that's a really important point. I'll probably say this for as long as we're doing the podcast. Even with some of my most experienced and successful clients, they miss that part. You know, I spend a lot of time going over the headline, the hook, the deck copy, that whole headline complex, and the first few sentences, mainly because I don't think as copywriters, as marketers, we have been nearly as attuned, pardon the pun, to this as songwriters and musicians are. I mean, you know, for a musician, that's like the first thing you're going to look at. You know, in classical music, is it going to say allegro, or is it, it probably might say triste, you know, happy, sad. I mean, that might be like right at the top of the music. So we need to realize we are in an emotional medium and we need to pay homage to it. Let's talk about the next part of the song, the verse. You want to start?
Before we do, I want to just kind of mention, this is how what I was talking about earlier, the template or the repeatability, the structure. Songs typically have this part of the song, then this part of the song, then this part of the song. And there's parts that repeat and parts that go off their own way. And that's the same thing with a piece of sales copy. So the first verse is usually where you kind of set up what the song is about. You set up the story that's going to be going on. You set up the setting of. And that's also the same thing with a lot of sales copy. That's where we set up, hey, this is the problem people are dealing with. Hey, this is the desired outcome that people are looking for. These are the stakes. So in storytelling, in songwriting, and in sales copy, that first section usually does the same job in all three forms of writing.
Yeah, and I'd like to point out that in school and, you know, maybe in business and in journalism, you can easily be criticized for repeating yourself. Well, you already said that. You know, you can see that a teacher writing that in page 5 of a term paper because you said it on page 1. The rules are very different, A, in real life. If you listen to the way people talk, they repeat themselves constantly, unknowingly. And the rules are different in songwriting and the rules are different in copywriting. Now, with things that get repeated, you don't repeat everything, but there are certain things like your hook, like your chorus, which we'll get to, you repeat. And you may have a certain theme or a certain set of words where you describe a particular problem or a particular solution or a particular idea or method or process. You're going to repeat it. And you need to, especially if it's new, in order to familiarize somebody with it. They might not get it the first time.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about on the show before the idea of like a golden thread that weaves through a piece of sales copy. Same thing with songs. A lot of times in that first verse, you get a hint at what the golden thread that's going to weave through that whole song is going to be. And that's one of those things that it's, as a copywriter, that's one of the like final cherries on top. That's one of the skills that most people don't get until years into their career, but it's one of those things that definitely makes a difference.
Yeah, you know, as long as we're at the verse at this point, it's amazing how much... All right, so let's risk copyright violation by quoting Paul McCartney yesterday. Love was such an easy game to play. Now what? It just fades away. I don't know. I believe in yesterday. I missed the third line. But he said so much in so few words. Every word had to earn its place. Now it looks as though it's here to stay. So I believe in yesterday. That was a different verse. But anyway, my point is every word has to earn its place. This is something my buddy, co-conspirator, partner, and mentor, John Carlton, said also about copywriting. Every word has to earn its place. There's another thing that happens in the verse, which is the verse starts to develop the emotional message of what comes next. And this is why it's good to develop those antennas if you don't already have them as a copywriter for emotion, because it's not the same, not to the same degree. The purpose of a song is mainly to express and evoke emotion, right? And including entertainment. The copy, the main purpose is to sell.
Talking about every word has to earn its place, one of the things that sets apart an amateur performer from a professional, really polished, well-polished lyricist is you can tell, we've got like SoundCloud rappers now where anybody with Fruity Loops on their computer can come up with a beat and record it and put their song out on SoundCloud. And a lot of the unpolished ones, they have words that feel shoehorned in. They have words that don't fit the flow, and you can hear it in it. Every time you hear it, it feels a little bit off. It feels like it was shoved in when it didn't belong there. And that's also very common in amateurish copywriting, is like you said, every word has to earn its place. Every word has to deserve to be there. And if you don't take that approach with songwriting, it feels like speed bumps in the flow. And I've heard you mention speed bumps in the flow of the copy. There's a very similar thing there between copywriting and songwriting.
Yeah. If you look at what came before it, if you look at what Ted Gioia says, great writer on music, he'll say music came before everything and laws used to be sung and everything used to be sung. But if you don't look at it from his knowledgeable point of view, but you just look at it from a more standard, narrow point of view, poems really came before songs in terms of popular culture, mm-hmm. maybe not in terms of... And a good salesman who knew how to give a really good, authentic, engaging pitch came before copywriting. Well, neither the poet nor the really skilled salesperson wastes words. Mm-hmm. They pick carefully because they want to do what works. Mm-hmm. But let's jump to the chorus. We kind of talked about it a little bit. In a song, the chorus gets repeated. It's a major emotional message, right?
If people have listened to a song, they know there's the intro to the song, there's the first verse, and then the chorus comes, and then there's another verse, and then the chorus comes, and then there's a third verse, and usually they end the song with the chorus. Well, the chorus gets repeated throughout the song at different points. And for me, that's kind of like a call to action in a piece of sales copy. I don't typically only have one call to action. I have the call to action three or four times throughout the piece where it makes sense in between the different sections of copy. We've talked before about the Homer Simpson buyer, the Lisa Simpson buyer. Homer Simpson's ready to buy right away. Lisa Simpson needs some persuasion. And so if you don't have the call to action up at the beginning for the Homer Simpson buyer, you miss that sale. And if you don't have it at the bottom for the Lisa Simpson buyer, you miss that sale. So having a repeating chorus, for me, it's just like having a repeating call to action throughout the sales piece.
Yeah, I really like that idea. What about tempo? You know, tempo is the beat, the rhythm. And in a song, very often, it'll increase towards the end. It'll get higher. It'll speed up. But the same thing's true in copy, right?
You know what I think sometimes is if you're trying to like catch a train and the train's already moving at 40 miles an hour when you first get there, there's no way you're going to catch it. So it needs to be a little bit slower, but you want to eventually get to that 40 miles or 60 miles an hour. but you can't start there. And so that's kind of how I look at a piece of sales copy. If I just start right away, assuming we have the curse of knowledge, we have jumping too quick to selling and impressing, and same thing with songs. If the song starts off too fast, it's hard to get you into it. And same thing with a piece of sales copy. If it starts off too fast, it's hard to get into it. So you see that kind of buildup. And I think that that's just something in our brain. I think that we like that buildup, because I notice movies, great books, they start off in the where we're at, and then they slowly speed up. It's like a roller coaster. And eventually you get to the highs and the dips and the highs and the loop-de-loops. But if you just start off 50 miles an hour, nobody's jumping on that ride.
Right. We definitely do. You see that pattern throughout, you know, all forms of communication and all forms of activity, really. I mean, you think about a football game and think about how it becomes more intense in the last 2 or 3 minutes if it's close, which they often are. If it's not, people have basically given up mentally at that point anyway. Yeah. So, but if you're going faster, you do reach a peak at a certain point. And it's called a crescendo in music. In a song, this is the climax of the emotion. It's the big hammer on the heart. In copy, this is a little like a crossroads close. It's like, okay, this is it. Now or never, right? Light or darkness. Mm-hmm. And any thoughts about the crescendo?
Yeah, I've heard you actually talk about this, about the rhythm as you get towards the close. Your lines become shorter, they become punchier, they become more kind of like machine gun firing copy, rather than pop, pop, pop. At the beginning of the song, it starts becoming like pop, 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 pop. I know that sounded like a little bit crazy, but I have noticed that in songs.
Now you guys know how Nathan used to rap. Okay, yeah.
In songs, they do that towards the crescendo of the song. And in copy, I've heard you talk about how the way that you write kind of changes towards that buildup.
Yeah. The word I like to use is staccato. It's very, very intentional and moving forward in one direction. It's not particularly lyrical or varied or interesting. It's just like purposeful. And, you know, do it now. Pick up the phone. Do it now. Click the link. I mean, which works and which people can receive. There's, if they haven't made a decision, they're going to click away or think about it. But if they are very close to a decision, that will pull them off the fence.
Yeah. And one way that this plays out in the real world for me is a lot of times bullet points, because they kind of fit that. When you're looking at a piece of sales copy, you have parts where it's kind of paragraphs of 3 or 4 lines at a time. And then you've got the bullet points that are usually just one sentence each. And usually for me, the bullet points tend to feel better towards that buildup, towards the end of the sales piece, rather than starting a piece of copy off with a bunch of real quick bullet points. I tend to put them towards the end where I'm trying to build up that fast-paced
staccato. Yeah.
Staccato. Yeah. That's typically how I see it, just visually, is the bullet points kind of help move that progress along. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I love that you say that. It never occurred to me that bullet points would be staccato, or that you would have them at any particular point in the copy. But, you know, outside of a few landing pages where you got to get the whole point across in a minute to get someone to opt in or you're done, or maybe some sales pages on e-commerce sites. Absolutely. What I was thinking of is the organic equivalent. And I don't mean organic content. I mean like real life. Like you meet a friend. Now, there are a few people who you'll sit down with them for coffee and they immediately start running a to-do list on you. Or, Nathan, the agenda for this conversation is boom, boom. But most people say, hey, how you doing? Oh, man, you wouldn't believe what happened to me last night. Guess who I ran into? You, right? And sort of like rapport, storytelling, chit-chat. It's how most humans behave and interact. Not everyone, and not in every situation, but in most situations, and certainly in a friendly situation, which you want the sales letter to be. Even if you're talking about something threatening or fearful, you don't want them to hate you for telling them. You want them to appreciate the fact that you're warning them of something horrible. So if you think about what real life is like, and then as you're getting more relaxed and you start telling a joke and you start talking faster, you know, and if you're getting to the punchline of a joke, and, you know, have you noticed punchlines usually don't have 5-syllable words in them? They're usually very short. Totally out of context, I'm going to read a punchline of a joke I shared with you privately, which is a clean joke, but, and listen to this, that sure is a big rock. I mean, that's very, very staccato, very simple words, right?
Well, it's right there in the name, punchline. It's a punchy. It's a line full of punchy, quick, short words. So that's what it is, a punchline.
Yeah, you notice it's not called a macrame line.
True that. Back to the comparison of copy to songs. Usually after that point, I'm thinking of like the Queen song, We Are the Champions of the World. After the like build up, then there's the kind of like slow, it's the song's not completely over. There's still a little bit more. And I think of that as in a sales piece, like my PS. A lot of times after I make my final call to action, there's just a little bit more for people that are still on the edge or still on the fence. I can just nudge them just a little bit with my PS. That kind of always feels like that wind down of a song for me. And I wondered your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So the technical term is coda. That's what that very last part is called. And, you know, sometimes it's just repeating a line as it fades out or PS. But, you know, if the song is trying to deliver a message to save you, say, it's, you know, save you from ignorance or from, you know, absence of emotion or from a bad feeling, then it's your last chance at salvation. And PS is sort of the same thing. It's your last chance to, you know, avoid the horrors of not having this product or this service in your life. Same idea.
Yeah, and I feel like it's the, for a song, sometimes it's kind of like that lasting impression. And for a sales piece, if there's a possibility, especially in emails, I like to use PSs a lot, where it's, they might close the email because they're sitting in line at the bank and they can't make the decision right now. They were just checking their emails on their cell phone. I can use that PS to really kind of cement what it was that I was trying to get across, so that when they do go home, they've been thinking about that last little PS the whole drive home, and they reopen the email and make the purchase. Then that's kind of like the end of the song does the same thing. Yeah, I got the message in the song, but that last little bit kind of sealed the deal and kept me repeating it. The "We are the champions of the world." I keep repeating that all the way home. It's like a little earworm. I think you have the opportunity to do the same thing with a PS.
First time I've heard that idea. I love it. It's terrific. And I think you're right. So obviously you want to get the sale. There are times when somebody's not going to be logistically in a position to buy. You know, if they have to, they don't know when they're going to be at the teller. They don't want to get to a place where they have to pull out their credit card or get the 3-digit number to make a purchase online on their phone. So they're going to have to close it out. And if you can cement in the main reason why they want to come back to it, that's next best. You know, I think that's really cool. And yeah, with songs for sure, it takes the sentiment and it seals it in. So I think that's really cool.
We have a couple like little bonus pieces. I don't know how many of them you want to go through, but I saw that you had dynamics here, and it immediately reminded me of the roller coaster. A song a lot of times feels like a roller coaster ride. A good movie feels like a roller coaster ride. A good sales piece feels like a roller coaster ride.
Yeah. So dynamics can be, you know, especially in a movie that's melodramatic, the, you know, the trumpets come up, the drums come up when you're listening to a soundtrack of a movie, and or you might hear these, you know, very quiet strings during a tense scene or maybe during a romantic scene. But in pop music, the dynamics are a lot more subtle, but they're different changes in volume level and different changes in intensity. And the same thing works in copy. If you just keep pounding them from the very beginning, that's not going to work as well. It's going to wear people out. They're going to go, I can't handle that. But if you can alternate a little bit, slow down, speed up, you know, the whole roller coaster idea, increase intensity, take a breath, another shocking idea, take a little time to unpack it, that kind of thing, that creates entertainment in a different way than we're used to thinking about entertainment. And it keeps people reading, keeps people watching.
I wanted to ask, this is something that I learned from you very early on, is helping to smooth the transition from one piece of your copy to the next. And there's something similar in songwriting as well.
Yeah, a bridge, right? I mean, and bridges are hard to write, it seems to me. I didn't even approach mastering songwriting, but I never even completely got all the pieces down. But bridge is fantastic because it's a transitional section that smoothly connects different parts. And in copy, it's the same idea, or it serves the same purpose. I think it's done differently, but it keeps the reader from feeling, whoa, why did you bring that up? Or I thought we were talking about this, and now you're talking about that.
I've noticed ones that you tend to fall back on are like, therefore, or I'm telling you this because, and it does. It just gives that simple transition from one step to the next.
Right. And by the way, this appeals to a certain part of our brain, which always wants to know, why is this happening? What caused that? So it helps if it makes sense, but it doesn't even always need to make total sense. It just needs to read smoothly.
Okay. I want to cover one last one before we're out of here. And that is the story arc. And songs typically have a story arc to them. Sales pieces have a story arc. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
You know, there are a couple of types of things that we typically think of right off the bat when we think of stories. We either think of a hero's journey or a garlic, or we think of just a simple recounting of what happened, you know. I think a great song like that is A Day in the Life. I heard the news today, oh boy, and the guy keeps talking about walking through this day as it goes, you know, more and more psychedelic off the rails. But there are other kinds of stories, too, in songs. Oh, like the song Yesterday. And there are, I'm sure, a lot more newer songs I don't know about, where you try and figure out, okay, how did this happen? What, not just a recounting of the facts, but what were, you know, sort of the, like an origin story kind of structure, where a person is trying to figure out the origin story. What did I do? What did she do? What did he do? You know, what did they do? Or what happened that none of us did? So that's in a song. In copy, the overall arc is not usually a hero's journey, usually not a nightmare story, not the whole thing. The whole thing is more like a problem awareness solution journey, which I think was first identified by Dan Kennedy. You know, I haven't been hearing his name every day lately. I wonder what's going on. But it used to be I would hear Dan Kennedy's name every day. Weird. Yeah, I mean, he came up with some great concepts and structures. And I think if you look, it's not like you should try and build your copy that way. But if you look at copy after it's written and it doesn't start with a problem, doesn't increase awareness, and it doesn't lead to a solution or promise of a solution, you might have a little work to do.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think the reason that there's so much overlap between the two is because it's just something that's in the human brain. We like to go through these journeys. We like these emotional roller coasters. We like a good getting on point. We like a good escalation. We like a good conclusion. And that is something that if you can weave that into your copy, a good getting on point, a good escalation, and then a good satisfying conclusion, it works great in songs and it works great in sales copy. And I'm just going to do a shameless plug at the end of this episode, because we kind of ended it with talking about the story arcs and you poo-pooed. You put up the cross to protect yourself from the hero's journey. because it's so overused. If you have it with you, I know that you have recently written a book all about different types of stories that you can use in your sales copy so that you don't have to use the hero's journey over and over again. Persuasion story code?
Yes, the persuasion story code. Yeah, absolutely. I wrote this book because I realized the hero's journey was a blessing for screenwriters and novelists and a fraud and an albatross for copywriters. And I said, you know, there are so many other ways to tell stories that work even better than a hero's journey. And a lot of people felt yoked by having to use a hero's journey story, which can work, usually doesn't work, and hasn't been part of the most successful ads and sales letters. So the persuasion story code, get it.
And we'll have a link to it over in the show notes for this episode. If you want to check that out, head on over to copywriterspodcast.com. And until next time, David, we'll catch you later.
Thanks. Catch you later. Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.